This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we've got lots to talk about on this weekend edition of the program because, well, a lot's been happening on the health front. And we invite your questions. 888-302-3684 is our number. We'd like to be part of this, so please enter into the doctor's office with your question about health or nutrition, 888-302-3684. And among the things that we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about a natural product, something that you can get as a supplement that, when tested, beats the most popular drug for fibromyalgia in an experimental study. Find out about that in just a moment. 888-302-3684. And among the things that we talked about this week, you know, this program, we air live across the country in hundreds of stations across the U.S. and Canada. But one of the best-kept secrets about Intelligent Medicine is there is lots more content available if you go over to drhoffman.com. And among the things that we talk about this week in our newsletter, and you can find it at drhoffman.com, is an article about DIM. DIM is a supplement that can be very helpful for hormone modulation. It is helpful for reducing the risk of prostate cancer, reducing the risk of breast cancer. Those are big concerns. But also a condition called estrogen dominance, which occurs in women, causes them to have breast tenderness and bloating. And it may even account for a peculiar form of very resistant weight gain in women. You know, men gain weight in their bellies. Women often gain weight around the hips, and that's due to their hormones, and excess amounts of estrogen contribute to that. And DIM may offer women who have that problem hope at turning it around. So check it out at drhoffman.com. Also a great podcast on the subject of statins and why statin use is so prevalent in America. One in four Americans between the ages of 40 and 75 take statin drugs to lower their cholesterol. Is it overkill? We had a fascinating discussion with Dr. B.H. Roberts, a pioneer in cardiology, about statin overprescribing. And you can check it out at drhoffman.com. Also, a wonderful podcast on the subject of ketogenic diet and hyperbaric oxygen for cancer. So please check those out. Lots of resources available for your edification. All right, I'm going to pose a little bit of a quiz for you here because each week I read my New England Journal of Medicine, and often the subjects are very obscure, about new drugs that I don't intend to use or about medical conditions that are so rare that I'm very unlikely to see them in my office. But this week, as I was, a little downtime between patients, and I was flipping through my New England Journal of Medicine. And every week they have kind of a brain teaser. They have a puzzle about a medical condition that is kind of enigmatic. And you're supposed to guess what's going on with a patient. So join me in this exercise. I'm going to read this case report. And I'm going to ask you to try and come up with some idea of what's going on. Now, remember, this is designed for medical professionals, and it's designed to challenge their diagnostic expertise. So if you get it, hey, you're way ahead of the curve. But I thought this one might be of particular interest to our audience because it's very germane to the subjects that we talk about here on this program. Here's a big clue. There is a nutritional component to this medical enigma. All right, it's case 14-2016, a 37-year-old woman with adult onset psychosis, which gets your attention right away because generally, when people develop schizophrenia, it occurs in teenage years or the early 20s. That's the typical pattern for development of schizophrenia. Folks seem to be okay in childhood, but then they become maybe a little eccentric. They become sort of loners, act a little strange in their teen years, and then they develop full-blown psychosis. That's the normal pattern. But why, oh, why did this woman wait until she was 37 years old to develop full-blown psychosis? So here's the story. A 37-year-old woman was admitted to a psychiatric hospital for adult-onset psychosis. The patient had been healthy and studying for a doctoral degree, so I guess she was pretty smart. When she began having symptoms of psychosis, her first symptom was a belief that, quote, people were talking about her as part of a larger conspiracy in which family, friends, and random people were part of a game and acting out scenes for her. She had stress associated with schooling and had contemplated changing school, but she had not had any other symptoms of anxiety or depression. A few months later, the patient's apartment was burglarized and vandalized. Her patients were the only other people with a key, and she believed they were involved. Because of threats she made against family members, she was admitted to a psychiatric hospital and became an inpatient. A diagnosis of psychotic disorder, probably paranoid schizophrenia, was rendered. Okay, so what they do in these case studies is they start revealing bit by bit the information that was gathered. So follow along as if you're a doctor trying to figure out what's going on with this lady. They did a blood test, and they found that the woman actually had marked iron deficiency anemia. She also had very low B12 levels, a level of 167 when 200 or so is the minimum amount of B12 that you should have. And her vitamin D level was awful. It was 10. So the question is, was that enough to tip her into psychosis? Well, they began treating her. They gave her vitamins, and they fixed those deficiencies. But the woman's mental illness did not improve. She was medicated with a bunch of drugs, Risperdal and Zoloft, but she didn't get much better, even with the medications and the nutritional supplementation. So I'm going to leave it right there and keep you in suspense. Start thinking about what could be causing this woman's problems, and we'll come back to it before the end of the hour and provide you with an answer. What's going on with this lady suffering at the age of 37 from a sudden onset of paranoid schizophrenia? All right, Lyrica is a popular drug for fibromyalgia. More people with fibromyalgia take it than any other drug. And it sort of works, but it's got a lot of side effects, and it doesn't really completely alleviate the symptoms of pain and exhaustion associated with fibromyalgia. So researchers decided to test Lyrica against a popular natural substance. That natural substance, available as a supplement, is called resveratrol. They compared the effects of resveratrol to Lyrica on mice, and what they found was quite interesting. The researchers found that resveratrol did reduce pain levels in mice, and it did so even more effectively than the Lyrica. What's going on there? Well, we know that resveratrol reduces free radicals. It's a potent antioxidant, and it's thought that oxidative stress might be part and parcel of what causes patients to experience fibromyalgia. So our brains are particularly prone to oxidative stress, and resveratrol is very likely to cross the blood-brain barrier and influence the level of oxidative stress in the brain. And so very, very interesting study. And hey, let's keep in mind, mice are not humans. But this fibromyalgia mice model has shown in the past to be a successful way of testing the effectiveness of drugs like Lyrica. In fact, that's how these drugs get approved in the first place. They don't try them on people. They try them on experimental animals first, and then they show promise. And then eventually they do human trials to evaluate safety and effectiveness, and then ultimately these drugs are approved. But resveratrol outperformed this highly popular medication for fibromyalgia. And that, I think, is a significant hint that resveratrol should be part of the armamentarium of people suffering from fibromyalgia pain and sleeplessness and exhaustion. Interesting study. 888-302-3684. We invite your phone calls, but we got lots to talk about on today's edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic aged garlic extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic aged garlic extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. 888-302-3684 is our number. And we got callers. We got Jim from Wyoming coming to us via KROE. How you doing, Jim?
Doing great, Doc. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
So I just had a question about how low is too low for blood pressure.
Okay, good question.
My blood pressure yesterday was 87 over 60.
Uh-huh.
And I had no symptoms, no dizziness or anything like that. But I just wondered how low is too low.
It's a great question. Are you taking blood pressure medication?
Negative.
Okay. So, all right. So the answer is it depends because a lot of people are walking around with blood pressure like yours, and that's fine, and it's healthy. So to some extent, it depends on are you symptomatic? Do you have lightheadedness? Are you fatigued? Do you experience dizziness vertigo? On changing positions,
things.
You know, none of those things. Okay. So that's generally a good thing. Where it becomes a problem, is when people feel weak and woozy. You know, they just kind of feel, just unsteady.
Mm-hmm.
And this may occur particularly in people who have something called POTS, which is a postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. When their blood pressure gets low, their heart tries to compensate for it. Their heart speeds up. They get palpitations. They feel their heart's racing. This is actually a syndrome of autonomic dysregulation. It means your regulation of a lot of these involuntary things like blood pressure, heart rate, and temperature control, sweating, are dysregulated. That apparently not the case with you. Now, one of the problems is when we take people who have high blood pressure and we medicate them, and we lower their blood pressure too much. And this is particularly a problem in older individuals, probably older than you are, people who are in their 70s and 80s. We get too aggressive. We lower their blood pressure to the point where the blood doesn't have a sufficient head of steam to reach the brain. People experience kind of lightheadedness and cognitive problems. They can't think straight. And it actually can lead to a stroke. You know, high blood pressure can lead to a stroke, but too low blood pressure can lead to a stroke because there's not enough blood pressure to perfuse the brain.
Now, I'm 81.
Well, you're a youthful 81, and you seem like you're in pretty good shape. Are you physically active?
Not really. I'm blind, so I'm kind of limited on type of exercise, but I do light rubber band stuff.
Yeah, and that's good. That's all good.
I walk on the deck, and I've got a bicycle.
That's all good.
Stationary bike I use.
That's all good. And your heart rate's normal. You don't have, like, a slowdown in your heart rate, because sometimes as individuals get older, they get a slowdown in the heart rate. It's sometimes associated with low blood pressure. That can sometimes
necessitate. Now, the heart rate is in the 70s and 80s normally.
Good. That sounds good. So it doesn't sound like it's a problem, but let's suppose that you were symptomatic and we wanted to get your blood pressure up. You know, we have so many ways of lowering blood pressure, but what about raising blood pressure? How do you raise blood pressure? Well, we tell some individuals with low blood pressure who feel weak and woozy to A, consume more liquids, drink more, but not just water, also consume a little bit of salt. And it may be as much as a half teaspoon or even a teaspoon of salt, because you can't just take water, because if you drink water, your blood will become diluted, you'll have low sodium, and that can cause you to feel lousy too. The other thing that can raise blood pressure, again, I'm not suggesting you do it, is to take a cup or two of licorice tea per day, something that will generally raise blood pressure a little bit, but you got to be careful and make sure it doesn't go too high, or make sure that sometimes you're not retaining too much water, because that's what licorice can do as well. Licorice will raise your sodium. It'll unfortunately lower your potassium, which can be dangerous. So people who are doing this, I generally like to monitor them with a blood test from time to time to see if they're coming to harm because of low potassium. But hey, you sound like you're okay. And, you're a healthy individual. Somehow your body is well adjusted.
It's not that low all the time. This morning it was back up to 108 over 79.
Hey, do you have a blood pressure meter that talks to you? I guess that's the way it works
for
you.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, hey, that should help you get better in touch with what's going on. It sounds like you got a workaround for your visual impairment. Thanks very much for calling, and thanks for listening to us out there in Wyoming via KROE, one of our power stations out west. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is a number. We'll take more of your calls on today's weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor here, president of the Texas Organic Research Center. As you probably know, it's a toxic world out there, but we can do something about it. Become knowledgeable consumers and use products that are safe and healthy, such as natural supplements that help protect the body's cells from toxic exposure. One of my favorites is Reg Active with ME3, the only probiotic proven to actually produce glutathione in the body. It's the body's master antioxidant, unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals and exposure to environmental toxins. Glutathione decreases as we age. RegActive is great for rebuilding it, and I strongly recommend it.
Look for RegActive at Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold. Revolutionary. Remarkable. RegActive.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And you can call us 888-302-3684. Or, hey, maybe you decide that you're too busy to call. Maybe in your car and you want to still get us a question. You can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. To find out the answer, you'll have to listen to our weekly podcast, Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer listener questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com gets you through to me. All right, let's talk to Dave from Iowa. How you doing, Dave?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
You know,
thanks.
When I can't find any answer from any doctors, I think of you until I call you. So I,
all right.
I hope I stay healthy. Anyway, I've got a little problem with a sinus. I think it's sinuses. I'm 71. I was a smoker. Okay, I quit that stuff. When I eat, I have about 5 to 10 minutes afterwards, I start to choke, and I get this phlegm that seems to get stuck somewhere in my larynx, and nobody seems to know. I got a good heart. I had the heart checked out. I've had the blood test taken, all that stuff, the blood pressure and everything. So, and nobody can seem to give me an answer on it. So
I'll give you an answer. I think I know what's going on with you. You probably have something called gustatory rhinitis, which is a fancy term that means when you eat, you know, when you eat, there's a variety of reflexes that happen. You start producing a lot of saliva in your mouth, but also some people tend to produce a lot of mucus generally. It's almost like a messed up signal from your brain to your throat and your digestive system. And sometimes this also implicates the nose. People get a runny nose as soon as they sit down to eat. And some, you know, they think, well, I'm allergic to this, I'm allergic to that. Well, maybe they're just, the act of eating is triggering a lot of mucus production. And what makes it worse is, well, you were a smoker, Dave. How long were you a smoker for?
Oh, I don't know. I started at 11 years old.
Till when?
71.
Okay, so you smoked for 60 years, and you know what happens sometimes after you stop smoking, unfortunately, is all that tissue that sort of got burnt out from the cigarette smoke year in, year out, it kind of got dried out almost like in a tanning factory. It comes back to life, and it regenerates, but it also regenerates with a big production of mucus. So unfortunately, you know, some people say, well, gee, you know, ever since I stopped smoking, it seems I'm worse. I'm drowning in my own mucus. Well, that may take a while to resolve, because the tissue is healing and, you know, in an effort to protect itself, your body secretes mucus. So I think that may be part and parcel of, what's happening with you. Now, with the answer, it's a little more elusive. You can take some things like, one of the products I like to use for patients with sinus problems is something called Sinitrol. It's available via drhoffman.com. You can also take NAC or N-acetylcysteine to thin that mucus. There's a little bit of NAC in the product Sinitrol as well. It's a combination of ingredients. This is not an allergy. This is a kind of almost like a reflex excess secretion of mucus that occurs pretty commonly in people when they eat. It's just you have an exaggerated form of it. Not much to worry about, although it's unpleasant. But, you know, unfortunately, your doctors didn't bother to explain it to you. All right, Dave? Thanks for your call. Okay. Thank you for your call. All right, here's something that probably isn't the cause of this hapless woman's problem, the 37-year-old with new-onset psychosis, but it's of interest nonetheless. Yeast infection linked to mental illness. Candida infections are also more common among those with memory loss. So report doctors at Johns Hopkins Medical Center. All right. Let's go back about 30 years ago or so to the advent of what was called the yeast connection or Candida. This, at the time it was introduced, was thought to be medical heresy. It was thought to be quackery of the highest degree, the notion that yeast could cause a variety of problems. Well, 30 years hence, the yeast connection theory has weathered the test of time, and more findings are suggesting that, we may have been on the right track when we talked about the yeast connection and its relationship to gastrointestinal problems, overall malaise, allergies, and even brain problems. I have patients who come to see me routinely who tell me their brain's not working. And often they have a history of taking lots of antibiotics or acid-blocking medications, which can cause an overgrowth of yeast. And often when they get on cleaner diets, the so-called yeast connection diet or candida diet, or when they take antifungal medications or herbs or probiotics, their thinking straightens out. Their mood improves. Their depression is alleviated. So here's what these researchers at the prestigious Johns Hopkins Medical School discovered. In a study prompted in part by suggestions from people with mental illness, wow, they actually listened to these people, Johns Hopkins researchers found that a history of candida yeast infections, see, they probably thought, well, these people are crazy. They're saying, well, the yeast infection caused my problem. But no, atypically, these researchers at Johns Hopkins, their ears perked up and they listened. The researchers said that a history of candida yeast infections was more common in a group of men with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder than in those without these disorders, and that women with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder who tested positive for candida performed worse on a standard memory test than women with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder who had no evidence of past infection. Now, by no means are we saying that the single or even primary cause of these mental disorders is yeast, but it is a significant contributing factor. And why might that be? Well, if you have a yeast problem, it may affect the immune system. It may cause autoimmune inflammatory problems in the brain that are associated with mental illness. We'll talk about that a little later when we divulge the answer to our case of the week. But yeast can produce toxic compounds which make you feel drunk or intoxicated, the so-called auto-brewery syndrome. And so these researchers determined that indeed there was a link between yeast infections and various types of mental problems and mental problems and memory problems as well, neurocognitive problems. So clearly there is a gut-brain connection. We know that a happy gut can yield a happy mood, and a disrupted GI flora may contribute to disorders of thinking. A very, very profound study, and I plan to cover that topic in our newsletter next week. The yeast connection, 30 years from its inception, has really stood the test of time in spite of tremendous skepticism by orthodox medicine. They've branded it quackery. You know, talk to a doctor about the yeast connection, they're going to say that's just a fad. That's no way that can be real. 888-302-3684. These days, you know, there's just not enough empathy to go around. There's so many people who are just not compassionate to the plight of their fellow man or woman. And it seems almost like empathy is going out of style. But there may be a reason for this. The most common drug ingredient in the United States is acetaminophen, the main ingredient in Tylenol. 52 million Americans, 23% of American adults, take medicine containing acetaminophen on a frequent basis. They live on it. They're in pain. And to blunt their pain, they take Tylenol or they take combination medications like Furoset. Furoset is a narcotic medication that's combined with a little bit of Tylenol, very commonly given for pain problems, back problems, post-surgery. And there's just so many people suffering from pain. But you know the expression, I feel your pain? Well, it turns out, according to research, that individuals who take Tylenol may not feel other people's pain. They may lack empathy for other people. The first experiment involved 80 college students. Half were given a liquid containing 1,000 milligrams of acetaminophen to drink, and the other half a solution that contained no drug. It was a placebo. After waiting an hour for the medicine to take effect, the researchers gave the participants 8 short stories to read in which someone suffered some sort of pain. In one scenario, for example, a person suffered a knife cut that went down to the bone. In another, a person experienced the death of a loved one. And then The participants were then asked to rate the pain of each person in the scenarios. Well, the results showed that those who took the acetaminophen rated the people's pain as less severe than the group that didn't take the acetaminophen. So this is interesting. More research was performed where they gauged people's levels of empathy, and they found that Tylenol blunted empathy. Past research has confirmed that it can blunt individual users' emotions, and that may be to the good if you're feeling stressed out. But it turns out that these medications both reduce physical pain, but they also have psychological effects, and they make us a little less human. And considering the scale of acetaminophen use, I mean, think cough medicine, think headache remedies, think remedies for back problems, and even sleep remedies contain a little bit of Tylenol. We may be changing the very way that people interact in our society by recalibrating their empathy. How strange a phenomenon that is, but hey, maybe it makes sense of our crazy society today. All right, 888-302-3684, and when we return, we'll give you the answer to that puzzle of why that 37-year-old woman checked into a psychiatric facility with full-blown schizophrenia. What's up with that? When we return on today's Intelligent Medicine.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal, or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're going through the case records of the Massachusetts General Hospital as published in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's a brain teaser for doctors, and this week's case is of a 37-year-old woman with adult-onset psychosis. And I kind of set the stage by telling you that this woman cracked up at 37, previously had been fine. In fact, she was studying for a doctoral degree and had been generally healthy. And some of the clues, when they saw her, she had lost weight. She'd lost 9 pounds, not voluntarily. She had B12, vitamin D, and iron deficiencies. But those weren't the cause of her problem, because when they gave her B12, vitamin D, and iron, she didn't get any better. In fact, her psychiatric symptoms were very poorly controlled despite the appropriate antipsychotic medication. So it suggested that there was something physical going on. It wasn't just a mental problem. But they tried in vain to figure out what it was. And finally, here's the answer, folks. Maybe some of you thought about it. They decided to send the patient to a gastroenterologist. Why gastroenterologist? Well, they wanted the gastroenterologist to check and see maybe, just maybe, she might have celiac disease. Well, the gastroenterologist did endoscopy and a small bowel biopsy, and lo and behold, she had celiac disease. Wow. Celiac disease causing schizophrenia? Well, didn't help much to get a diagnosis of celiac disease, because according to this account, the patient thought her practitioner was being deceitful regarding the diagnosis because she was paranoid. She refused to adhere to a gluten-free diet, so the psychotic symptoms and paranoia persisted. So finally, She was rehospitalized at a psychiatric inpatient facility where she was placed on lockdown and fed a gluten-free diet. And guess what happened? After nearly 3 months at the psychiatric facility, the patient's delusions dissipated. She got better. And so what's up with that? Well, it turns out that when you have celiac disease, people think of it as a gastrointestinal disorder. You have diarrhea, you lose weight, you're running the toilet all the time, can't hold anything down. Not always the case. She did not complain of gastrointestinal symptoms, but she had what were called extraintestinal manifestations of celiac disease, which meant that the autoimmunity triggered by the celiac antibodies damaged her brain and caused her to have mental symptoms. And this is not uncommon to see in patients with problems around gluten to have chronic headaches, short-term memory loss, or even things that resemble dementia. Patients with Alzheimer's disease, it's turned out, have been found to have celiac disease, and it's been reversed with a gluten-free diet. Symptoms of irritability, anxiety, depression, seizures, balance problems, attention deficit disorder, and even autism have been linked to celiac disease. So that's the answer to today's case study from the Massachusetts General Hospital. And if you got the answer right, you're doing better than a bunch of doctors who missed the diagnosis. Let's talk to Robert in Port Washington, New York. How you doing?
Hey, doctor. I'm all right. So I have a little problem. I went to get an MRI with contrast with the dye, and unfortunately, it's gadolinium, and unfortunately, I do not think it went well. 5 days later, I'm here, joint pain, fingers, itching, no signs of swelling.
So,
but
so you think you have a reaction to the gadolinium, right? To the,
I
to
do,
the dye.
I do,
yeah.
Correct, but
yeah.
I did not have an allergic reaction when it was administered,
right.
But, you know, nothing very visible. It's just all joint pain and stiffness.
Okay. So and, the question is, what can you do about a gadolinium toxicity reaction? That's a little tough because usually people who get MRIs, when you get an MRI, you have a choice of getting contrast. The doctor may want you to get contrast because contrast shows things up better. The problem with gadolinium is that some people don't tolerate it very well. And particularly in people with kidney problems, it'll accumulate and it can cause some pretty severe, problems. So I don't know if that's the proximate cause of your symptoms. It might well be, but you need an evaluation to determine that. The question is, how do you get the gadolinium out? We have something called chelation therapy, which presumably you're aware of, and it can help remove certain heavy metals. It helps particularly with lead and mercury and cadmium, and to a lesser extent, things like aluminum and gadolinium. Gadolinium is really a bitch to get out of the body. It's very hard, very tenacious. It sticks around and can be something that is hard to mobilize. But with a combination of intravenous chelation, perhaps with EDTA and oral chelation with something like DMSA, that might be something which can be alleviated. Again, you know, we see the association. Correlation is not necessarily causation. Your symptoms may or may not be related to the gadolinium exposure. But what did you have the MRI for in the first place? Maybe that's a clue to what's going on.
My pituitary, my endo wanted to rule out a tumor on my pituitary.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, right, because, I don't know, maybe you're having visual problems, you're having hormonal problems, headaches, so, okay. So he did the test, and, you know, is it possible that a pituitary problem is related to that? Yes, I guess it is, because some people with pituitary problems have derangements of their, what's called their HPA axis, affecting their cortisol, that can make you more allergic. I don't know what's going on. I'd have to evaluate it, see some of the test results, maybe perform some additional tests, and see if indeed it's the gadolinium that's causing your problem. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. When we return, we got lots more to talk about. We invite you to participate. 888-302-3684 is our number. And this is the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.